Tonight, as is true every Tuesday night, some part of our conversation will be about what the Buddha called dukkha and the end of dukkha. Dukkha is the word for suffering, dissatisfaction, that which is difficult to bear, stress, etc. And the Buddha suggested that he only taught one thing. He says, I teach suffering and the end of suffering. So I think every week this is what we talk about. And of course we can't cover all the myriad ways that we suffer. So we highlight different aspects each week. Tonight I thought that with the stray thoughts that I've been having today, I would speak about one of the great sources of suffering and hopefully the end of it. Remember, it's all about getting off the wheel, not getting on the wheel. All about the end of the path, not the path itself. And tonight's topic is praise and blame. So the reason I'm talking about this today, for a variety of reasons, actually, but the line that's been going through my mind, actually since early in the day, and it's funny how people, situations show up in my life to remind me of this. And the line is a passage from a famous doctor, and she's famous because she was the medical correspondent for ABC News. For many years, Nancy Snyderman. And Nancy Snyderman had a mantra. And her mantra was, other people's opinions of me are none of my business. Other people's opinions of me are none of my business. And we all, in hearing this passage, know that it would be useful to actually adopt this. Wouldn't you say? Would you say, I'm curious, is there anyone in this room that is not in any way plagued by a dependence on what people think of you for your sense of well-being? Anybody here not concerned about what anyone thinks of you? How many of you would say that just outright that you are troubled by, that you suffer because of your worry about what people think of you? Few honest people. I would say it's one of the great sources of insecurity. And I think that it's embedded in our conditioning. So it's not just you. It's another example of it's not your fault. It is really embedded in our psychological development, our emotional development. We are, our whole sense of ourselves as a, our whole sense of narcissism, what makes us unique and special, is formed by the level to which we are praised or we're blamed. Level to which we are praised for the things that we do that are that give pleasure, and blamed for the things that where someone may have experienced some displeasure. It may not have anything to do with the inherent value of your nature, your being, but it's really a lot about how you were perceived, and we tend to internalize that, and it starts very young. I have as most of you know, I have an 8.5-year-old daughter, Molly, who, for the most part, and as much as I can have anything to do with it, is just... she is just loved up. She's loved. She's praised a lot and blamed very little. Blamed only to the extent that that we try to encourage her to be respectful and kind and speak in, you know, use wise speech and be harmonious and not be excessively selfish, etc., etc. But for the most part, she gets a lot of positive mirroring. And yet, she is, because of her socialization, because we don't exist ourselves alone apart from each other, she is continually buffeted by the waves of what other people say, what other people do. She's not impervious. And I don't think there's one person that's impervious to the views of others. So you can see that our whole sense of what's sometimes described as our specialness, our narcissism, our uniqueness, it is, in spite of it being an inevitable developmental piece of our existence. Now, there's not one person that doesn't have to develop some kind of sense of themselves. Even though it's an inevitable part of our development, it is, as we know from the nature of reality, it's a house of cards. We are inherently insecure. It is not possible to find a sense of ourselves that is not in some ways subject to changing circumstances. So we find ourselves really, really insecure. And one of the ways that insecurity manifests is and grows over time because of our socialization is our dependence on how we are viewed by others for our sense of well-being. And the shift in our life as we begin to move towards self-awareness is to begin to shift away from that constant dependency, that external dependency for our sense of well-being, and much more to an internal sense or a sense of being able to rest in our own being relatively, and I don't mean absolutely, but relatively independent of other people's opinions of us. And that's long process. That is the process of awakening, of shifting from this kind of vortex of continually being buffeted by the waves of life, all the worldly winds of praise and blame and gain and loss and fame and shame and pleasure, you know, all the different waves, to being able to ride the waves, to be able to know that, yes, these waves exist in life, but my sense of well-being isn't dependent on one or the other. So even the willingness to be blamed and knowing that I can ride the waves of blame, willingness to be praised without getting so inflated that I come tumbling down the next time that somebody says the opposite. Ideally, if we could be simply mindful of praise, mindful of blame, knowing that they are arising and changing, that they come not according to our will or wish, but according to the winds of circumstances. If we could be mindful of that, that would be a wonderful thing. That's methodology, or that's trick number one in dealing with the insecurities that we experience. Being able to shift from being always on the edge of our seat, just hostage to what somebody else thinks, to settle back into a sense of home. Sense of home, and be able to not lose that sense of a stable refuge of awareness, a refuge of embodied presence that can accommodate, that can sit with equanimity, with serenity, as the storms of blame and praise come over. Now, there are people in life, I think of politicians, who seem sometimes like they're impervious to praise and blame, because they're constantly getting both, just harangued from both sides. But I'm not sure that there's a capacity to experience the winds of praise and blame where one seems impervious, where it's really just because that person is so bound up in their narcissistic view, bound up in their own specialness, that they're actually cut off from the flow of connection with others. So it's as though it's a kind of prison. It's a kind of isolation. I can think of a few politicians that seem just so much wound up in a at least appear to be wound up in this vortex of specialness. That's not really a reliable refuge either. There's got to be, you know, the shadow side of that that's just a field of defensiveness. But there's another kind of capacity to experience those winds of praise and blame, and that's really, it comes from wisdom. It comes from that quality of serenity and equanimity that knows that other people's opinions of me are just opinions. And those opinions are not necessarily absolute fact. They're just views. Those opinions were born for that person from their circumstances, their attachment, their views, their clinging, their whole sense of what makes them special. And so it's usually people's views and opinions. They're coming out of our own views and opinions come out of a lot of insecurity. We're just trying to stake out our turf, trying to find what's right. And opinions are just opinions. So a little wisdom and a reminder that we can't control other people's opinions. That person can't control their opinions. That person is just the heir of their karma and all the influences that gave rise to who they are. And just as we are the heirs of our karma. So we can't control our own opinions, let alone someone else's. Opinions arise. Views arise. But we can work with others' opinions, and we can work with our own opinions. And we do that by first and foremost being mindful of them. Wow, that's what it feels like to be praised, inflated. That's what it feels like to be blamed. That's what it feels like to be liked. That's what it feels like to be disliked. And that's what it feels like when everyone stays, and that's what it feels like when somebody leaves. Just kidding. Now, even if my conditioning was to personalize that somebody left, practice is to learn how to feel that. Notice what that is, that feeling of personalizing, a feeling of self, of having my sense of worth dependent on whether somebody stays or not. Oh, isn't that interesting? I can feel that. Or dismissing it. Oh, that has nothing to do with me. Oh, you think you're so... Whatever it is, being mindful of it is a great support. It creates that sense, that space, that difference, the different gravitational field from being bound up in my reactions to noticing my reaction. It's a great relief to be able to know, oh, I'm not my reactions. These reactions are just coming unbidden. This personalizing, somebody walking out of the room, that's just conditioning. It's not me. It's not mine. It's just conditioning. So that's one thing, is to see with wisdom that I can't control my own opinions. I can't control other people's behavior or opinions. So that works fine when I think about it for a little bit, but it doesn't quite hit the mark. It's not enough. Because we do, in spite of the logic of not taking on somebody's opinions as my own and having my well-being dependent on it. Not one person here thinks it's wise to have your well-being dependent on other people's opinions. It makes you pretty insecure, doesn't it? Nobody wants to do that, but yet we find ourselves conditioned that way, blown by those winds. And just like any being that you find in nature, I know for me, the hierarchy of beings that I feel most responsive to, my heart most goes out to, are those beings that are vulnerable. The little animals, we have a cavalcade of changing animals in our household. And we have two two little, what are they called? hamsters. Well, one's a dwarf hamster and one's a regular hamster. So we have dwarf hamsters and we have fish. And it is not, it's usually not more than a couple weeks go by before one or the other doesn't die. Someone's always dying or hungry or sick or, and these beings are so obviously vulnerable and my heart goes out to them. We have our little dwarf hamster has a wheel and you know they're nocturnal and they come alive at night. And our little dwarf hamster loves to run on that wheel, and it goes, and it makes racket the whole house. You can hear the dwarf hamster spinning on the wheel. And the wheel broke the other night, and we lost the screw for the wheel, and I couldn't go to sleep until I somehow fabricated a new wheel. So when Tiny woke up, she would be able to run on her little wheel. My heart goes out to those little vulnerable beings. And the fish, a fish just died 2 days ago. And the other fish was seemingly, and of course I projected a lot onto it, was looking for what happened to the other fish that was in the tank. Your heart just goes out to vulnerability. And then you find little beings, little dogs, little cats, all the beings, and then the little people. The more vulnerable, the more our heart goes out to them. Somehow or other, we forget that no matter how old we are, no matter who you are, no matter high and mighty, there is not one of us that has lost that level of vulnerability. We only somehow think we should become impervious. Become toughened up. And of course we are toughened up in a certain way. Resilient. We have the capacity to deal with life. But we're all in our heart of hearts easily blown. We have fear in our eyes. We're always looking to see whether somebody likes us or doesn't like us. We are continually demonstrating our vulnerability. And yet, there's some way that... That is more often the cause of shame and more blame than it is the cause of compassion and kindness. And so the second most important thing that we can do with ourselves when we are feeling vulnerable to the views of others is to love ourselves up, is to just appreciate our vulnerability. Embrace yourself. Now, it doesn't mean that you don't also protect yourself. Also, not be a glutton for other people's views. It's a great test to see, okay, let me see if I can... Of course, this has been a wonderful test for 27 years, sitting in this seat. You know, seeing and hearing just countless opinions about how I'm doing. Sometimes love notes, sometimes hate mail. And it's great practice. But sometimes we really do need to turn our attention. And one of the ways of protecting ourselves is to literally turn our attention away from the one who's blaming or praising and back toward our own embodied presence. And making sure, first things first, that we are tending with care and attention to the flow of vulnerability or whatever it is that's happening in our own mind and body. That is a way of protecting ourselves. It's not cutting off from life. It's actually entering into the life of the one that we are most that most needs care, and that's ourselves. Because we are really no different than my little dwarf hamster. I should say Molly's little dwarf hamster. She's become a little bit of all of ours. So we have to care for ourselves and our vulnerability. And it's also fine to find little tricks to, you know, make jokes about it. I think that line from Nancy Snyderman is really, there's a certain little humor in it. Other people's opinions of me are none of my business. It's a nice little turn of phrase that just somehow lightens it up a little bit. And it can't, did you want to say something? That was the next part. Thank you. The question is about, you know, we aren't experts at seeing ourselves, so sometimes it's very useful to have other people's opinions. Is that what you were about to say? Yeah. In general, I would take all people's opinions as their own conditioning. Over the course of our lives, though, there are those who, after we've checked them out over a long period of time, find that they are a safe refuge, find that they do have our best interest at heart, that they demonstrate over and over wisdom and love. Then we put them, and you know those people in your life, we put them on our board of directors. And those people we really listen to. The problem is, for most of us, is we tend to put people who don't know us on our board of directors. And then they fulfill their task by helping to create a lot of confusion in our minds and self-judgment. So it's really about being discerning about who you listen to. And so thank you for reminding me to include that. Yeah. Who's on your board of directors? Does everyone here have a board of directors, people who you listen to? Is this a topic that's relevant to you? So this is just another dimension of dukkha that comes in everyone's life because of the winds of praise and blame. Every single person has this. And yet it's an equal opportunity for mindfulness and love. It's an equal opportunity for liberation because the whole of our practice is about freedom. We're not going to be able to be free from praise and blame, but we will be able to, we can become free with praise and blame. We can be free to experience the effects, protect ourselves when we need to, but also learn to find the capacity to be free and not so dependent on these inevitable winds that blow through our lives. And I think it doesn't mean to be cut off. It means to be affected by praise, affected by blame, but recognizing that both of these reactions, both of these winds are changing. They're just like the weather. And they do not, there's not one praise that you've ever gotten that defines you. And there's not one moment of blame. Last but not least, these winds of praise and blame run through our own minds. They run through our own minds. And the biggest shift in our own practice is beginning to see even the impersonality, the non-personal nature of our own internal judgments and our own internal praise even. And just to notice that this is just a voice in the mind, these coming unbidden. Sometimes there's praise, sometimes there's blame. But it's really important, especially, that you catch, that you start to be vigilant and notice the votes, or the votes. Notice the voice of judgment, of criticism, of hatred, of the voices that are unkind. And every time you notice one of those, every single time you hear that critical, ruthless voice, even if you have to fake it, let it be the cause of bringing in the voice of kindness and mercy and support and gentleness. So every single one, none of those, none of that self-hatred has to be wasted. It can be put to good use. Any questions, comments? That's all I really had to say about that. When I said every time you hear a negative voice in your mind, a self-critical voice, a punitive voice, a self-harming voice, any of these, let it be the reminder to meet it with a kind voice, with loving kindness, some kind of tenderness. So putting it to good use is it's as though it's your gong that reminds you this is the time to be kind. This is not the time to believe that you're the one that voice is describing. Usually that voice, if you really pay attention to it, it describes somebody who doesn't exist. Somebody who's... It describes a somebody, and you're not a somebody. You are indescribable. You are life itself. You're love itself. But we have this whole personality view. I'm this, I'm that, I'm good, I'm bad, I'm not this. None of that's really real when all is said and done. We are incomparable, we are indescribable. So the degree that we believe those little internal voices that I'm not good enough, I'm not enough, we're believing a story about somebody who really that can't be captured in you. It's just a story. And yet, most of us are very conditioned to have that internal self-talk of insufficiency, not good, judge, I should be, could be, would be, all often just not quite who you're supposed to be. That voice can be, like all the distorted voices that play through our mind, that voice can be put to good use. It can be the reminder of your absolute enoughness, your sufficiency, your wholeness, your presence. Please. Being well received is tied into your livelihood, and it's true for many of us. Yes, yes, we are vulnerable. Yes, no doubt about it. Yeah, if you couldn't bear me, you wouldn't be here. Yes, your livelihood can be. Yes, your livelihood can be affected by it. No, that's a good. It's a good point, and I know that that's true here. That my livelihood, my support would be dependent on not being well received, and if I thought about that, I would not be very well received. If I was constantly ruminating or insecure about whether I was going to be received. So that it's a reminder that yes, that's true, and our life tends to function much better when we are a little bit less when we are psychologically less dependent on how we're received. And when I started doing this, I was terrified and very much blown by the winds of what anybody would say, and people would pick up on my fear and it would trigger their own fear or their own judgments or whatever, their own disowned insecurities. And over the years, I think that what's actually made me easier to take, you'll have to tell, I don't know whether, I have no idea about what you experience, but what's, I think, made me easier to take is I much more care about you getting the Dharma than what you think about me. And I can't say that I don't care at all how I'm received, but I much more care about whether the Dharma is getting through, whether you're actually realizing the truth of what I'm saying, not whether I'm looking good tonight. Because I know that changes, and I know that I can be much more internally critical than anybody here in the room can be of me. So yes, you're right. It does, our support sometimes does depend on how we're received, but I think it works better when we can differentiate a little bit. Thank you for reminding me. Please, Madison. High standards? Tyranny of high standards. I like that expression. I think it says it all. Having high standards, we tend to be tyrannical about high standards. I think it's great to have high standards mixed with tremendous mercy and forgiveness for whatever our human limitations are. It's very simple. We just tend to forget the loving kindness part and the mercy. And that's why it's so important to have that as a centerpiece, as a thread running through every moment of every day, is absolute number one best friend to ourselves. And to consider that when we praise or blame someone else. Just where are we coming from? Are we coming from a place of love, or are we just protecting some kind of personality view about being right? Please, saw a hand back there. You're the last voice of tonight. I can't hear you very well, so you have to speak. Exactly. So what we do in our practice is we notice the judging mind judging, notice what the impact is. If we really paid attention to our judging mind, we would see that it makes us miserable. And even though on the surface we may have a sense of inflation or it's a kind of reverse kind of self-praise, it doesn't make us feel good, because it gives us that feeling that we're cut off from the flow of life. It actually isolates us. So it's something to pay attention to. And then to treat our own judging mind with kindness, because it's an old practice. It's an old, tired, well-worn habit. And yet, our mindfulness of it, our loving kindness, can start to whittle away. In fact, the one thing that yogis that I work with over many, many years, the one thing that most, I would say, 99 9/10% of yogis, of meditators, over the course of their practice, that's the one thing that loosens up more than anything else is the judging mind. It softens. Self-judgment softens. Judging others softens. And it's the inevitable fruit of wisdom and love. So I think we'll leave it at that. So the key here is to make that shift from excessive external dependence to an internal locus of wholeness, to trust in awareness, trust in love, trust in our sense of presence. I think this is beautifully stated in Hafiz's poem. It's called Admit Something. Admit something. Everyone you see, you say to them, love me. Of course, you do not say this out loud. Otherwise, someone would call the cops. Still, though, think about this. The great pull in us is to connect. Why not become the one who lives with a full moon in each eye? That is always saying with that sweet moon language what every other eye in this world is dying to hear. So be the one who loves, not the one that's crying out for love. So let's just sit quietly. May all beings find steady mindfulness. May all beings cultivate the heart of loving kindness. And may our practice today and every day be dedicated to the welfare and benefit of all beings. And any blessings from our practice tonight, any goodness, any merit, any benefit, let it touch the hearts and minds of all beings. And let it be sent and radiated with a deep wish that all beings can have happiness in their lives and the causes of happiness. All beings can be free of suffering and the causes of suffering. All beings can realize the sacred happiness that's without sorrow here and now. Unshakable peace. And a deep wish that all beings can grow in serenity and equanimity, able to meet the joys and the sorrows, praise and blame, with less reactivity. A deep wish that all beings can be free. So thanks for listening. Please take care of your tender hearts this week. That's funny. I'm really, you know, I just think about how much we are. If you could just look at everyone and see how much they're afraid of whether you love them or not, and just try to love everybody up. And just a reminder, a gentle reminder, that our room rental Donna basket and our teacher Donna basket, everything's offered freely here, and the invitation is for you, as a practice of generosity, of opening the heart, to support both the room rental, support the teacher who's ever taking this seat. And this is the first practice that the Buddha offered, to practice generosity. It's a great way of letting go. So thank you in advance. Remember, the room is $150 a week, $600 a month, and you can offer in many different ways: cash, PayPal, checks to the church that are tax deductible here, put Mission Dharma on the memo line. Also, a way to practice Dana is to use the our service, our what is it called again? Our network? Services Directory Network, and the people who are offering different things on the network. It's on the website. Utilize their services, and, you know, there's so many ways to practice Dana. So thank you for your practice and your presence, and have some fun with praise and blame.